Are you sitting comfortably? Then I shall begin. Let us go back in time 139 years and to the Victorian era. Four gentlemen, one English, one Scot, a Frenchman and a German, truly believe they have the ability to summon and then manipulate the Grim Reaper itself, thus giving them control of the ultimate power. Will they succeed? London, England, 1878. Professor Frobisher alighted from the hansom cab and, after tipping the driver, headed off into number 45 Montague Terrace. It had been raining heavily, and even though the trip from the horse-drawn cab had been short, it was still enough for the eminent Professor James Edward Frobisher to curse audibly while swiftly removing his hat and cloak. Damned rain! In fact, does it ever not rain in this confounded city of ours? Probably not, sir. Frobisher suddenly jumped. Oh my, I wish you wouldn't do that, Carrington. You nearly frightened the very life out of me. Joseph Carrington bowed slightly, if not subserviently, whilst apologising. My sincerest apologies, Professor Frobisher. May I take your cloak and hat, sir? Yes, of course, answered Frobisher. He felt immediate remorse at rebuking his butler, Joseph Carrington. Oh, and Carrington, what about a spot of supper and a large glass of mulled wine by the fire for both of us, eh? Carrington, again bowing his head and not showing the slightest bit of emotion, swept away, carrying the Professor's large hat and equally large black cloak. Professor James Edward Frobisher taught physics at Cambridge University, or used to, not anymore. Frobisher had long since retired, but as is tradition in the world of academia, he would always hold the title of Professor. Frobisher was a widower. Margaret had died 2 years ago from malaria, which was unfortunately contracted on an expedition for the Royal Geological Society in Darkest Africa. Margaret had also been cursed with the fact she were barren, so bore no children. Since then, Frobisher chose to live alone, that is, apart from the ever-present Carrington. Though Frobisher harboured no homosexual tendencies whatsoever and never had, he liked Carrington the same way you would with any other member of your family and was eternally grateful he had stayed on after the sad demise of his beloved wife Margaret. Frobisher, after changing into something more comfortable, settled down along with Carrington in his favourite spot in front of a blazing parlour fire. After polishing off some smoked kippers and toast, as well as quaffing a generous amount of mulled wine, both Professor and Butler sat contentedly by the fireside, each smoking a pipe. It were, as was usually always the case, the Professor who spoke first. May I ask you a strange question, Carrington?
Strange, sir, Carrington replied.
Frobisher paused for a few seconds, and then in between long talks on his pipe, said, Yes, well, in the general manner of things, I suppose it would be, but have you ever wondered what happens the moment you die? For someone who was usually devoid of all emotion like Carrington, even he momentarily raised an eyebrow and after a quick chuff on the ivory-bowled pipe replied, Well, to be honest, I haven't really given it much thought, sir. Frobisher glanced across at Carrington and said, Quite. I suppose not many people do. There seems to be a real fear attached to that word, doesn't there? The word death. Carrington, wondering where this was going, dared to ask the question. Carrington later blamed it on the wine. He wasn't normally this bold. Is this anything to do with Margaret, sir? Frobisher at first wanted to chastise Carrington. How bloody dare he? How dare he, Carrington, the hired help, dare ask a gentleman a question of such personal nature? Then suddenly Frobisher had a change of heart, and realising Carrington would have only good intentions, calmed down and then began to speak in a sort of subdued tone. Yes, Carrington, I think it is. Indeed, every time I think of Margaret, I immediately think of that dreaded five-letter word. Frobisher paused and Carrington let him. 50 years a butler taught you that. A somewhat dewy-eyed and now seemingly melancholic Frobisher continued on in the same conversation, which to Carrington was beginning to sound more bizarre by the minute. What would you say, Carrington, if that one day man had the means to harness, control, shall we say, death itself? As in being able to decide who in fact should die and who shouldn't. Carrington couldn't help staring at his boss, even though that were to be considered most impolite, but did nonetheless. Just as Carrington were about to answer, though he wasn't sure what to say, Frobisher spoke again. I've been thinking about this for a long time, Carrington. Indeed, not just myself, but some of the chaps at my club have too. Frobisher was, of course, referring to the Golden Key Club, so called because the main door to these premises was indeed opened by a 24-carat gold key. Rumour had it that the key had been fashioned out of Mayan gold when the original founder of this, what was now an exclusive gentleman's club, had returned back from an expedition to South America. Both men had finished their pipes and the flames in the fireplace were beginning to wane. However, Frobisher hadn't. Looking over earnestly now at Carrington and with the dewy-eyed melancholy seemingly vanished, Frobisher had a twinkle in his eyes and with a new resolve, if you like, he began to speak. Tomorrow, Carrington, we, the chaps and I, that is, are going to attempt something no one else in history, in the history of humanity, has ever dared to attempt before. Frobisher leaned forward now until he were almost touching Carrington, which in fact did perturb the butler slightly. However, he was in the employ of this man, and whether sober, drunk, or just plain crazy, it was the butler's duty to always pay attention to his master. Yes, Carrington, though I shouldn't really be telling anyone at all about this, but... Frobisher paused as if for added effect, and it was working because Carrington was becoming increasingly uncomfortable watching his master act in this way. We, Carrington, are actually going to make contact with death itself. Yes, that's right. The Grim Reaper, the Dark Angel himself, the ultimate power. But not just to speak to this infernal creature, you understand? Oh no, oh no, we... At this point, Frobisher had a wild-eyed look about him, and if Carrington was being totally honest, he really now feared for his master's sanity. We, Frobisher repeated, are going to control this thing, this creature, or whatever it is. We, the Golden Key Fraternity, are going to once and for all decide who dies and who doesn't. Frobisher at that point slumped back into his chair and promptly fell asleep. A somewhat disturbed Carrington immediately slipped back into professional butler mode and after manoeuvring the slumbering professor onto a nearby chaise lounge, Carrington covered him up with a heavy wool blanket as well as tucking a pillow under his head. Carrington, just before he went to sleep that night, had a last thought. Was his master telling the truth? Was something like what the professor had said really going to happen at the Golden Key Club? Carrington suddenly had another thought. He would accompany his master tomorrow. If nothing else, he could serve drinks and be of service to not just the professor, but his esteemed associates too. Yes, decided Carrington, that's what he would do. And confound it, if his master disagreed, he would attend anyway. And then Joseph Carrington too fell asleep. The Golden Key Club. The Golden Key Club was a grand place, even by Victorian standards. A huge four-storey detached building situated right in the centre of London, Westminster to be exact. Inside this property inhabited a collection of London's elite. Gentlemen with connections that spanned the British Empire from as far away as Kiribati in the Pacific to as nearby as Buckingham Palace. Indeed, if you were anyone at all in London society, then happen as not, you were a member of the Golden Key Club. Four prominent members of this fine institution were, number one, Dominique Lecky. With a name like the above, he had to be French, and of course, Monsieur Lecky was in fact French nobility, who some of his family barely escaped with their head at the beginning of the French Revolution. La famille Lecky were now suitably ensconced in the British way of life, and though French to the core, Things were a lot more comfortable this side of the channel, if not safer. Number two, Alexander MacDonald. Alexander was a Scotsman and whose grandfather was a founder member of the British East India Company, which of course meant that Mr. MacDonald was a very wealthy man, which also meant he wielded a lot of power, which in turn again were the reason Alexander was a fixture and fitting of the Golden Key Club. And number three, Ruben Kaltz, or should I say Ruben von Kaltz. Ruben was from Prussia, and with owning most of that part of the world in land or otherwise, meant a first-class ticket into that den of testosterone commonly known as the Golden Key Club. The fourth prominent member now stood outside this exclusive establishment and, after accompanying Carrington, took his cloak and hat, Professor Frobisher proceeded to go meet up with his fellow history makers in what would undoubtedly be a momentous occasion. On partaking of the time-honoured and customary greeting, all four prominent members of the Golden Key Club headed off toward a secluded area of this prestigious gentleman's club. Indeed, of what these four were about to attempt, no one else could know, and would absolutely not be tolerated by, shall we say, other more religiously inclined members. Though Carrington wasn't supposed to have been there at all, Frobisher somehow managed to convince the other three that he felt Carrington may be of some use, attending to their needs if they should need anything, not to mention the fact he would be an independent witness to what was about to happen. All four members, along with the ever-present Carrington, entered into a large and what appeared to be blacked-out room. Heavy dark drapes were in place and not letting the slightest sliver of light anywhere into the room, placed what appeared to be in a sort of pentangular fashion were 12 5-high, 5-foot candlesticks. Burning brightly atop of these sticks were 12 equally large black-coloured candles. Alexander MacDonald took the lead. Indeed, Frobisher, Leakey and Kaltz were totally beholden to MacDonald in this bizarre venture, for it were he that was well practised in the black arts. In fact, MacDonald had been published several times on this somewhat controversial subject. You are probably wondering at this stage why these men would want to summon something so devastatingly terrifying, something older than time itself. Well, each of these men had their own particular reasons. In Leakey's instance, it was to try and see if death itself were able to allow one to speak or form some kind of contact with someone who had previously been taken. During the French Revolution, Leakey had lost many members of his family, including both his parents, to Madame Guillotine. Only three remaining family members were fortunate enough to smuggle the what was then a tiny newborn Dominique over the Channel to England and relative safety. Kaltz's reason for being here was for one reason and one reason only, power. Kaltz was, I suppose, your stereotypical Prussian, power-hungry, ruthless, as well as cunning, not to mention filthy rich. Indeed, it wasn't by chance that 60% of the German Empire consisted of Prussian origin, and just like Kaltz, most Prussians believed it in their destiny to rule. And if there was a chance that Kaltz could convince the ultimate power, that was death itself, to join forces with Germany, then surely nothing could stop them after that. Nothing. Alexander MacDonald. Well, Alexander had everything most people would ever want in life, materially, that is. He was already filthy, stinking rich, and owned lands and properties in 20 countries, spanning 5 continents. No, it was simply curiosity that was now the only obstacle facing Alexander MacDonald of the Clan MacDonald. But aided by his growing fascination with all things pertaining to the occult, and in particular death itself, MacDonald wanted to really see for himself if it were actually possible to raise what had to be considered the most malevolent force ever known. Frobisher. Well, Frobisher had been fixated since the death of his wife Margaret, and once knowing that MacDonald had the possible means to summon the unthinkable, his mind was made up right there and then, and he would assist in any way he could.
Alexander motioned everyone to remain silent and then spoke softly and with an air of solemn gravitas. If at any point you gentlemen have a change of heart, then I suggest you leave now. Is that understood? After the realisation that this was now it, Frobisher did endure a flutter of hesitation, but then decided nothing would probably happen anyway. Even though he fully supported this endeavour, he still bore a certain amount of scepticism. Lecky and Kautz, however, didn't show any hesitation whatsoever and promptly nodded toward MacDonald in a let's get on with it fashion. Halting for barely a second, Frobisher too then nodded in the affirmative to let these strange proceedings commence. Carrington? Well, Carrington just stayed well into the background and watched, with, it has to be said, with a mixture of fear and cynicism. He just wasn't sure what this person calling himself MacDonald were able to summon anything at all, let alone the Grim Reaper. However, just before MacDonald spoke again, Carrington couldn't help but feel for a small silver crucifix his grandmother had once given to him when he were a small child growing up in the slums of East London. Carrington wasn't sure why he did this, but he did nonetheless. MacDonald headed over toward the 12 black burning candles and explained what was about to happen. "Note the 12 candles, gentlemen, and the way they're set out," said MacDonald. He carried on. "This denotes the 12 wings of the Angel of the Abyss, the only thing on this planet that was given the power of life and death by the Lord God Almighty himself." MacDonald then produced a strange-looking piece of tapestry from the tartan uniform he were wearing and proceeded to recite a short incantation. "You, the Angel of Abaddon, the destroyer of the light and the bringer of the dark, we four men made of flesh, MacDonald, Lecky, Kautz and Frobisher, summon thee. You, the power of dark, power of light, we summon thee, the great reaper, to win the life fight. We summon thee." Exactly the moment Alexander MacDonald had finished those last words, all 12 candles blew out. "What in the blazes?" cried Frobisher. "Shush!" snapped MacDonald. "Wait." Suddenly the temperature in the room dropped alarmingly, and now there were a real fear and uncertainty etched on all four men's faces. Carrington, well, Carrington was furiously twirling the silver crucifix so much now, it's a wonder it didn't combust due to the friction from its fingers. All four men were now rigid as the temperature in that room dropped to what must have been -0 Celsius at the very least. Then it happened. There was a huge bang, followed by a hideous moaning sound that surely could have only emanated from the bowels of hell itself. All five men in that room instinctively crouched to the floor, covering their heads in protective fashion as they did. Then the 12 candles reburst into life and the temperature inside the room began to rise rapidly. Indeed, within a few moments it was back to how it should have been on a normal summer's morning in London town. It were Lecky who spoke first. "Mon Dieu, what was that bang? And why did those candles go out and then come back to life?" Von Kautz then spoke up. "What is this trickery, MacDonald? Loud bangs and candlelight disappearing, then reappearing? This was supposed to be an historic occasion, not some cheap British sideshow for your personal entertainment." Frobisher then had his say. "Well, I have to admit, that scared the devil out of me." He tittered a little, if somewhat nervously, then looking directly at Alexander MacDonald, said, "I take it things haven't gone exactly to plan, Alexander, my dear chap." Alexander of the clan MacDonald was a proud man and didn't care to be made mock at by a sausage eater, a frog, or more importantly, a bloody Sassenach. He immediately answered all queries and in true robust Scottish fashion. "Are you calling me a liar, Kautz? And you, wee Frobisher, I dinna do nothing wrong at all. Those are the words, and I followed everything to the letter. In fact, I'm as baffled as you are." Lecky spoke up next. Well, messieurs, we tried, and there is no shame in failure, and we could always try again at a later date, I suppose. The key threw his arms out in typical Gallic fashion as he said those last words. At that point, Carrington asked if the gentleman would prefer refreshments. Summoning the Greek Reaper had to be at the very least thirsty work. Yes, Carrington had by this time 100% decided that he had good reason to be cynical, in so far that these gentlemen could ever possibly believe they could ever pull off something so utterly preposterous. Whilst all four would-be raisers of death mulled over what might have gone wrong, and Carrington headed off to find suitable refreshments, a large black stagecoach pulled up outside the Golden Key Club. Stepping out was an immaculately attired gentleman, 6 foot plus and resplendent in all the finery befitting a gentleman of class and nobility. After alighting from the black five-seater hansom cab, a tall dark man, using an elaborately golden-tipped cane, rapped 3 times upon the door of the Golden Key Club. Once inside, the club's concierge asked if this gentleman would be a member of the Golden Key Club. No, 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 answered the immaculately attired gentleman, smiling radiantly as he did so. I'm here strictly on business, and would wish to meet with Messrs. Leakey, Kaltz, MacDonald and Frobisher. They are expecting me. In fact, I've arrived here to pick them up. They're going on a journey with myself, if you like. May I be at liberty to ask your name, sir? Requested the concierge. It is a club tradition that all who enter freely give a name. But of course, my good man. My name is David Ellery Anthony Tibbs Hoskins. At that point, the tall, immaculately dressed and devilishly good-looking gentleman removed a large black top hat and performed a low, sweeping bow, and then added, at your service, and have been for a very, very long time.